Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, how's it going? And welcome to episode 38 of Someone Who Isn't Me. My name's Daniel P. Carter, and my guest on today's swim is Joe Duplantier. And Joe is frontman, guitarist, songwriter, and producer for French metal band Gojira. Over their 20-plus year career, Gojira have established themselves as one of the greatest bands in heavy music, I think. Supremely heavy with a technicality and aesthetic that sets them apart from a lot of others in that world. That's how I feel about it anyway. I think they're amazing. Over the course of 7 studio albums, they've achieved great things and are lauded by fans, critics, and peers alike. Today, as I record this, the band have just released their latest album, Fortitude, which is an amazing collection of songs that showcases not only their amazing playing, but also their long-held views on ecology and empathy and spirituality. Over the course of this conversation, Joe and I discuss the new record and all the things that are encompassed within it. We talk a bit about their recent call to raise awareness for the current destruction of the Amazon and the plight of the indigenous people that live there. And we talk a bit about life during the pandemic and how the little things in life can be some of the toughest at times like these. It was wicked to catch up with him, and I really enjoy all those kind of tangential side notes that go on in a conversation like this, and I hope that you will too. Joe, like all the guys in the band, is a great artist, and like many others that occupy that role, he's got that common trait, which is self-depreciating humour. And I feel like you'll hear a couple of times in this that when we were chatting, he almost makes like a jokey caveat after certain things that he said, where he feels like he might be taking himself a little bit too seriously, which I personally find super endearing. And I think it goes to show what a smart and humble guy that he is. As I said, Fortitude is out now. So if you haven't already gone and listened to it, you should check it out as soon as you're through listening to this episode, obviously. And I think it shows that the band's at the pinnacle of their creativity. As I said, Fortitude is out now. So if you haven't already gone and listened to it, you should check it out as soon as you're through listening to this episode. I think it shows the band at the pinnacle of their creativity, but it also shows where heavy music exists in the wider world right now as well. This is Joe Duplantier of Gojira. So, how you doing anyway?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Yeah? You're back in France?
Yes. Yes. Do you want an honest answer, or do you want I'm fine answer?
No, I always want the honest answer. I wouldn't ask you otherwise.
So, I'm going to make you feel super uncomfortable right off the bat. I'm done with interviews.
Yeah, I'll bet.
But no. Honestly, it's everything we worked for many years, you know, is to get there.
Yeah.
To fame, you know, to world fame, whatever it is. What I mean is, no, I can't complain because we have too many interviews. It's great. It's really great. It's just a lot.
That means you're popular. So it means you're doing something. Well, generally, it means you're doing something right.
Yeah.
So that's a beautiful thing, surely. But I get it. What number am I? Am I like 473?
Nah, you will never be a number. You will never be a number to me.
Thank you.
Always be Dan.
Thanks.
Dan the man.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Should we just jump straight into it? Because this is going to be, I'm going to do this for my podcast, but also we're going to use a load of it for the show as well. So we get 2 for 1. Otherwise, we'd have to do 2 interviews, and I feel like you've probably done enough already, so let's stick to one, and then I'll multi-purpose it.
Yes. But although I complain a lot about, you know, doing too many interviews to my management, to my wife, to my brother, and even to the interviewers. And although I complain, I'm also very talkative, as you know, and I'm not shy with my answers. I talk too much most of the time, so you'll have plenty.
I would always rather these things would be conversations rather than interviews as such. Although saying that, I made a bunch of questions or conversation pieces to talk about. and as you said, let's get uncomfortable straight from the start. Let's just do that.
Yes, exactly. Okay, let's do that. I'm ready.
So I was thinking, right? So the album title obviously means to have courage in the face of adversity. But do you think that that's enough to have courage? Just courage? And if so, yeah, is that enough? We'll go to the next bit in a minute.
No, obviously it's not enough. You know, you also need water in order to not become dehydrated. You need a roof above your head if it's cold. If it's raining, you need love, compassion. It's not a statement what humanity needs only, but it's just something we wanted to express, I guess, with this album.
Yeah,
it was a vague idea. You know, it's music, it's poetry, it's metal, it's just tracks,
it's
songs.
Art. Yeah, but it's art though, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
It's art though.
It is, yeah. It's art, yeah.
I just thought that my thinking was that we're near the brink as far as the planet goes and the way we act and the way we treat the habitat that we're part of. And then started making me think about the idea of courage and how to overcome these situations that we find ourselves in. And that you could almost view it from a perspective as that courage needing to be to make quite harsh decisions.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're like 7.7 billion people on the planet now. It's like doubled in the last 50 years. And I was thinking, like, is it a bit too late? I don't know.
I don't know, but I watched a show on YouTube called Vsauce. It's this incredible guy who's talking about the universe and some fun facts. About physics and quantum physics and facts about the planet, why the seasons, how our calendar happened to be our calendar and all that stuff. And one episode of that Vsauce show that I highly recommend is what would happen if we would all get together, all the people of Earth, all together in a herd and count to three and all jump together. Would we be able to change the course of the planet? Are we heavy enough as a humanity to even have a small impact on the course of the planet, on its crazy journey in the universe? The answer is yes. By a billionth of an inch or whatever.
Yeah.
So almost nothing, but we do have an impact.
Well, we do, clearly.
But we do. But you know what? The fun thing, and that's not what I'm telling. Why I'm telling this story, the Vsauce story, is there was one fun fact in this video, and it's not the fact that we could indeed have an impact on the trajectory of the planet with our little weights, human weights. It's the fact that he says, you know how much space it would take if you would put all the people of Earth together, grouped in a herd. And I thought to myself, oh my, how much space would that cover, all the people of Earth, more than 7 billion people standing side by side in a herd? And I thought, is it like big, like a country or two countries or something like that? Perhaps Spain and Portugal and a little bit of France, that size. The answer blew my mind. It's way less than that.
Go on.
It's the surface of Los Angeles.
Wow.
And this is a very legit show. This guy is not messing around. He's an incredible smart guy. He's a scientist, and he's the way he expresses himself. It's very pleasant to listen to. And you can tell he did a lot of researches and So I believe him, and then it's sort of, it makes sense. We're not that many people on the planet. When you take a plane or train and you go cross country, what you see is mostly, you know, empty spaces.
Yeah.
Empty of humans. You see a lot of, you know, forests and mountains and ice caps and oceans. You know, the oceans cover 70% of the globe and so on.
Yeah.
So I think the problem we have is not the space per se, but it's more rather the way we use the resources and the way we consume too much. We're not sustainable in the way we behave and eat and drink and breathe and burn stuff and dig for fossil fuel and then put it in the water. By the way, check this out. Vsauce is incredible.
I will
every
do.
Single episode. Yeah, it's really good.
Nice.
The guy is called Michael. He's also very funny.
Okay, I'll check it out for sure. Yeah, that is quite mind-blowing, actually, that you think about how many people there are on the planet, but side by side, it would be such a tiny amount of space.
It's like if you have fleas on your, fleas on your, or light, how's it called, lights on your head.
Yeah.
And it would all, you have an impression that it's everywhere and it's scratching, but if you could gather them all, it would be, that was it. So that's humans on the earth.
Yeah, we are fleas.
Yes, definitely a parasite of some sort, in a way, from a certain angle.
Yeah.
I can't help but using that word parasite to describe humanity. But also we're not just that. We're not just a stupid brain trying to suck on something bigger than us. We're also more than that. We're capable of compassion and great things, and we have a potential, a divine potential of togetherness and community and
connection,
love and emotions, connections. It's beautiful.
I was talking to Einar Selvik recently from Wardruna, and we were sort of discussing basically animism and the idea that used to be the default existence, how people were fully aware that they were just a small part of one whole thing, that was that the whole thing was this living electric being that we were just a tiny part of. And then there was that sort of paradigm shift, and the awareness of our place in a wider scheme of things kind of changed, and that would be the reason why we're or it could be the reason why we're in the situation we're in. Because this is something that I think that your band has, you've been speaking about it for such a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, very overtly as well, with things like, Toxic Garbage Island from Way of All Flesh and stuff like that.
Yeah. But I think about these things like just like a child would, react to something like that. It's very childish, our approach. And I speak for my bandmates too, because they're like me. We're a bit naive. We're not very sophisticated. Somehow we are through our music, so something, but it's a very, very direct sort of reaction. And we're very emotional. We think about the Amazon and we have tears in our eyes, and or the oceans and the animals. And I'm not overthinking it too much. I just feel sad for the fish. I feel sad for all these beautiful trees and these precious animals, and the frogs that are disappearing, and the lions.
I hear you, and I think that I will get to that in a minute. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think it is important to be aware of these things, and then if you make art, to then use that as not as a platform, because I think that implies therefore that a certain degree of sort of preachiness, and I know that turns so many people off straight away. No one wants to be like lectured at.
Of course. But I think there's a fine line. Yeah.
Yeah, between raising awareness.
Yeah, you were saying as a platform.
Yeah. Do you feel that you have a duty to do that, or is that just something that moves you? And obviously art is a sum of the things that have meaning within the artist's life, and I guess it's just that you feel like these things move you, and so therefore it makes its way into the art. Or do you feel that you have not an obligation, but mm-hmm. but a platform to do those, talk about those things.
Yes. I totally understand your question. I think I'm a world of paradox, especially right now that I have to answer this question. I'm so torn. I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Because in a way, yes, and it's something I say very often. We have a responsibility as artists to point out what's wrong and the evil that men do. And it seems like everybody's sleeping. it seems like everybody's sleeping, you know, let's wake up. But how pretentious it sounds and how preachy, and I don't want to be that guy at all. But yeah. somehow, you know, I start singing in front of the mic and that's what comes out. And then people dig it. And then they ask me questions, and then I answer the questions on fancy microphones and stuff. And then when I listen to whatever I say afterwards, when it's online, I
cringe,
shit my pants. I cringe, definitely cringe big time. So right now I'm meditating, very concentrated to not look too goofy or stupid, you know, in my answers. I don't want to come across as, you know, preachy or... You know, when we call the album Fortitude, is in the first place we want to inspire ourselves to be strong, you know, and to overcome the day. Bringing the kids to school is a big challenge for me, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have to really gather myself just to face very simple situations. It's easier for me to go out in the wild and build a house, you know, under the rain with nothing but my bare hands, than to bring the kids to school and just face the parents and just say hi to them.
Yeah.
And do the small talk thing. For me, it's far more impressive in a way. So it's strange, you know. I feel strong, but I feel so weak at the same time, and I'm not my carbon footprint is not neutral either. Mm. You know, I'm part of this society. I have a car, I take planes, I take buses, and then I write songs about, you know, how we need to save the world and stuff like that. But I would like to remind the listeners and stuff that we're just a band, you know, we're writing songs. Now, of course, we're trying to organize things. Sometimes we're doing things like for the Amazon with our single Amazonia, or when we partner up with Sea Shepherd in a way, because we understand that these are important matters, important things.
Yeah.
And we should educate ourselves more on what's happening, and in order to make smart choices every single day of our lives, when we buy something, and when we even talking to people, if you try to be more compassionate and patient with people and listen more, you can do miracles in somebody's life or somebody's day. You can make somebody's day just by smiling to them.
I agree.
A homeless person, you know, if you look at a homeless person in the street instead of ignoring them, just a look could go a long way. I really believe that.
I 100% agree with you. I think that's very true. And I find it's interesting you saying that what is considered to be normal daily life can be so tough, because it can. And I think that we've been, the way that society is now, we're so insular and atomized, and everybody is in their own little world and so focused on what they're doing. And a time when we should be way more connected, and that, as you say, the communication between people should be so much easier and it's so important. It's not. It's done the opposite. And I think that, you know, there's whatever, you can get into the reason why that's happened, and maybe that's a deliberate thing. But then you start to put the tinfoil hat on a bit, but which I'm a subscriber to anyway. But I think that daily life is difficult. And I think at a time like now, so much more so because of what's going on, has amplified everything, and it's made things so, yeah, day-to-day life is tough. And you know, a lot of people would be like, oh, life's so tough for you guys. I mean, yeah, of course it's tough for everybody, and some people have it really, really badly. And at times it is heartbreaking to even sort of read those stories and think about those things and interact.
It's almost beyond, it's almost impossible for us to really have compassion to some of the people that, you know, are in real, real pains. Because when you see how hard it is to just go catch the bus or wake up in the morning or, you know, go to work or face social situations, I get very anxious and social situations. I'm doing it a little better. I have my tricks. But when you think then that some people are under attack, they're being shot at, or they're being beat up, or orphans, you know, there's some horrible. In Africa, there was a lot of conflicts. Kids witnessed their entire family being slaughtered in front of them. Why? How far does it go, you know? If just awkwardness and you know, laziness can be so tough for in our Western societies, you know, with simple things, little things that are almost invisible with a naked eye.
Yeah,
this toughness there. Imagine what some people experience.
Yeah,
in this world, maybe there's a threshold when it's too hard. Something disconnects and you don't feel the pain anymore. But it's interesting to think about that,
yeah,
for sure. And talking when we released our single Amazonia, and we did this charity for the indigenous communities, and we did the auction and the donation thing on this platform. I was fortunate, and I was very humbled to talk with some of the indigenous leaders, and they shared their reality. And after several stories I heard, you know, from their everyday life, I felt my legs were shaking because I felt that was a reality that I'm very, very far away from. And even though I care a great deal and I'm doing everything in my power right now to make a little difference with the help of, you know, the metal community and some activists that are guiding my steps.
Yeah.
It was a little effort. It was maybe 2 months, I want to say, on the phone until late at night, because I was talking, I'm in France right now, so communicating with America, some people in New York and some people in Brazil, and some meetings and some texts. And I had to film myself talking to explain the project, because otherwise it was not going to really come across. And I felt I was doing so much, you know, but that's it. Now I'm, you know, I don't have that much to do about it. And people, and I keep answering interviews all day, and people ask me about my activism. Oh, you're an activist, you're doing this and that. But really, what I'm doing, I'm drinking coffee and answering interviews. I'm not on the field fighting, risking my life.
Yeah. But I don't think there's any hypocrisy in that. I think the fact that bringing awareness and money to help in those causes is a huge amount of work. You know, even if you feel like, even if like the next day when you've done a bunch of stuff, you can go, right, okay, right, now I'm going back to normal life. That doesn't alter the fact that you did those things, and the effects of those things will be felt in those people's lives for quite some time. So yeah. I don't think there's any...
No, I agree. I agree. It's also a selfish thing, because in a way, and I don't want to, you know, drag on that word selfish, but I want to say in a way it's almost selfish, because it makes me feel so much better about myself doing, you know, something. So, but it's a win-win situation. Again, we're in a society, you know, impacted by Christianism and guilt and the idea that we should suffer, and if we don't suffer, something's wrong, you know. But it's okay to be happy also, and to care about people that suffer, and to have a normal, you know, life. It's okay to complain, even though we're not in the worst position in the world. It's okay to, you know, to... So, it's rather, I'm not saying that it's not okay, but what I wanted to say is that there's a lot we can do that's going to, it could take a little of our time, a little money or a little energy, and make a difference to other people. And I reflect on how good we have it compared to, 80% of the planet or 90% of the planet, for sure.
Yeah. I agree. And I think that awareness, But that awareness is a big thing though, right? Because a lot of people aren't aware of that. They drift through their life and have no awareness that there are other people around them, let alone other people that are on the other side of the planet or the other side of the street suffering terrible things. And absolutely. I'm not necessarily angry at those people because they're just living their own existence, and that's fine. As long as it's not actually willful ignorance, I think that's the difference.
Well, ignorance, unfortunately, these day and age is a crime. You know, we can't afford to remain ignorant and to say the planet is fine. It's not positive thinking. It's not projecting something good on the world to say the planet is fine.
Yeah, there's no global warming. Yeah,
exactly. You could say, yes, there are problems. There is global warming. We should reduce tremendously our consumption of a lot of things. Mm. But we'll make it.
Yeah, I think so. I have hope.
Yeah, planet is fine. Me too. By default.
Yeah. I find it worrying at times when this kind of ties in with one of the tracks in particular. But you know, when you have people like Elon Musk, that's like, right, we need to get out to other planets. Let's go to Mars. Yeah. Let's terraform Mars, and then we'll make a new planet to live on. It's like, well, we've got a planet that is perfect for us, and in fact,
it's so perfect.
We actually we're here because of that.
Exactly. We got elephants for Christ's sake. A few of them left. We have giraffes. What are you going to find on Mars? You know, larvas?
Yeah. I don't know. It made me think of another world. You know what I actually thought of when I first listened to that song? It made me think of, I'm terrible for making connections between songs. Like, I'll hear a song and I'll be like, oh, that makes me, you know, and I can't help but do that. And I know that's super annoying for people. It's like if I paint something and someone will go, oh, yeah, that looks like so-and-so. And I'll be like, yeah, fuck. Yeah. Of course it does, because I love their work. But yeah, another world made me think of After the Gold Rush. You know Neil Young?
No.
You don't know that's... Okay, so like the last verse, not musically, but just kind of the idea. Because in the last verse of After the Gold Rush, it says... what are the lyrics? It's...
What a great title, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Gold Rush. It's like I think in the song, Neil Young's saying about having this dream about seeing a spaceship and people being loaded onto it, like these chosen people being loaded onto the spaceship with the idea of, and it's the lyric is like flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home. And it's just like the sadness he's feeling as he's one of the people left behind because everything's, I assume, because everything's fucked and they're just off to somewhere new to like repopulate. Yeah. But yeah, maybe that's weird how, I don't know, maybe that's probably not the ideal connection, but
I like it.
It made me think of that.
I'm reading the lyrics right now. It's very interesting. I'm going to look at it again. Yeah. The idea of space exploration, finding another world and stuff. It's so, there's so much to say about this. It's highly symbolic and, and incredible, but I'm in the business of space travel, but not with real rockets and stuff, but with songs, you know.
Yeah.
And from Mars to Sirius was already that.
Inner paths to outer space.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, Another World was a very interesting song for us to release. There's a bunch of new things on this album, Fortitude. People don't necessarily talk about at first glimpse, but there's two things I can think of that are a bit different. Is Another World is a tantrum, and it's rare for us to make tantrums in songs. You know, usually we're, let's all calm down. Let's all, you know, be centered and loving and fix things, you know. And here on this song, it's like, no, I want another world. I'm out of here, you know. It's a tantrum. You know? I don't know. And another thing is with the song Amazonia, it's we're calling a song like a specific location on Earth when usually we're more in the realm of symbols and tales and, you know, slaying the dragon and... legends and myths,
archetypes,
and also complicated, sophisticated concepts like that's a metal thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, using weird words or scary words like Meshuggah is doing.
Yeah.
Cannibal Corpse is a different story. It's more gory, but Meshuggah, they will use, you know, you strange word, transcendental, you know, absurdity. And on this album, we as a writer, I try to use simple words.
Yeah.
More and more. I saw a comment on the last song that we published. Somebody said that it was childish, the lyrics. At first, I was a bit offended. What do you mean it's a child? But it's totally true. There's something childish about the lyrics.
I think there's a difference between childish and childlike, though, right?
Yeah.
I think making something like childlike would I feel imbue it with an innocence and an openness and a easy understanding, but childish maybe makes it. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
Okay, totally. Thank you for that, because yeah, that, please, I like that. Yeah, see, that's another thing about me being French and speaking English, is that I think in French it would be the same word. So when I say childish, I mean childlike, I guess. That's good. I'll try to keep that in mind. Yeah, but you know what I mean. There's something. I like it. I like to show simplicity and.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's almost naive, but in a good way, you know? When you're...
Yeah, I think that comes across in the lyrics and the themes, but also in the music as well, because there's these moments where it feels like things that would have been, I assume, influences for you all since first getting into music that would have always been there, but now they feel like they're coming through a bit more and you're a bit more open to them, and
yes,
things can be more stripped back and direct and beautiful,
yeah,
as well as, you know, crushingly heavy and punishing at the same time. And that's the beauty of everything, though, right? It's the balance of those things. To be able to counterpoint those moments, it only amplifies each other off of itself, right? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's dynamic.
Yeah.
It's called dynamic.
That's the word.
in my head, you know?
Yeah.
No, but it's exactly the way you described it, you know? That's,
yeah.
Creates movement. It creates something is activated. If it's all in the red all the time, it gets a little, you know, you get numb after a while.
Yeah.
But it's good to have that life going on.
Yeah, and I think
I'm super excited, man, with this record. The production, how we, you know, the angle on the production. We were committing to every take with different amps, different guitars, different finding the right texture, the right soul for each riff, which we never did before. Usually we would commit to a sound that would be an average sound for the whole album and then create some dynamic during mixing when there's a deadline soon and you don't have time really to think about it.
Yeah,
and you're stressing so much that you make all these mistakes. But when you track and you have more time, you can really have fun and use your intuition and, let's plug it in a bass amp, you know, and let's put this crazy distortion that belonged to my grandmother, It's so old and dusty and, you know, and then you use a pedal and then you try, you capture that and that's it. You got it. You don't need to worry about it later at mixing, like everybody says, especially in metal.
Yeah.
Metal is full of nerds. Full of nerds.
It is. I am one. So that's fine. I can agree with you.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to cure this little by little.
Yeah.
I don't want to be too nerdy.
That's so true, isn't it? It's all about, I need to find my tone. I found the ultimate tone. And then it's like, that's it. So I just stick with that now forever.
Yeah.
And we won't worry that this passage of music, like you couldn't have done the title track. You couldn't have done Fortitude with... with the whole band at like standard setting, right? Yeah, it just wouldn't work. And I think, so this is something I wanted to get onto is that I've said this to you before, I'm sure, but I see your band in a kind of, in quite a special light, in a similar realm as bands like Neurosis and Tool and Radiohead, bands that have a very specific thing about them, so that you can, if you were to play a Gojira song to anyone that is aware of your band, they'd go, oh, of course, that's Gojira, in the same way that you could do that with all of those other bands that I said about, right? But
well, that's cool. These are great references.
And I think that another thing that makes those bands so special and that your band fits in with those, well, there's two things, actually. The first being that I think that there's like an integrity and a spiritual worth that is vital to what your band does, and it energizes the art of your band. For me, anyway, that's what I get from it. Like, you're probably like, no, man, I just plug in and write riffs and that's it. But for me, I feel like there's something in there. And I think on the last record, obviously, the themes that you were talking about on that record were very honest, and it imbued the art with something that gave the whole thing a spiritual worth. Like and something that I took from that was the idea that, you know, that consciousness is more than just like an artifact of us being a physical thing, right? That there's more.
Yeah.
There's more than this.
Absolutely.
And I think and I think that's something that all of those bands have as well. And I think that continues straight away with this record, with Born for One Thing, right? Because it feels like the idea of, like, you know, what is that one thing to tame the greatest fear of all, and to face the unknown or death and to experience a life, and what that would then impart after that life, perhaps.
Yes.
Or is that me just like...
Well, it's you doing that, and it's but makes puts you right in the core of it.
That's fine.
Yes,
but would you?
No, it's exactly what you said. Yeah, it's well, there's, you said a lot of things here.
Sorry,
but one thing. No, please. This is great. The question of our demise, you know, the end of the whole humanity, or the end of my life, or one's life, you know, a person's life, the end of the physical manifestation of the spirit, of the personality, has been my main preoccupation as a writer. If I can call myself a writer,
yeah,
you know, it's a big word, but I do write words and print them on paper. So as a writer, I would say the idea of death and the imagination, the fantasy around death is basically, you know, thinking about life. When you think about death, you think about life. What is life? What is death? It's almost like we have the key to life after we die, you know, in a lot of traditions and a lot of in the Bible and in legends and the Vikings, you know, they have their Valhalla, whatever, you know. So there's always the promised land, the promise of knowledge and truth and enlightenment, and we finally gonna get all our answers. And sometimes in certain books, they say that these answers are very different than what we expect. And the answer is far more simple and bright. And so in a way, I'm looking forward to have that light, to be in that light and to be detached from space and time and to be in this other dimension of absolute presence. I like to write about it. I like to write about the fact that everybody's scared of something that is only a form of enlightenment, I think. Well, maybe it's the end of everything. And maybe, you know, one time a friend told me, it's like you turn off the TV and that's it. It's off. It's off. Death is the end.
Yeah, but that analogy doesn't even work, though, because that TV is still, it's still, those signals are still in the ether. Exactly. You can still turn the TV back on and somebody else can see that show. You know?
Yes, and if you have special abilities, maybe you can even capture these waves, these wavelengths. So exactly,
I agree.
That's what I answered to the guy. I'm like, well, you use the TV analogy. It's a perfect analogy. The show is still running, bro.
Yeah.
You just can't see it.
Well, that's just it, isn't it? Because I think that's just based on the limitations of what we are. We all know that the human eye can only see within a spectrum of light that's so narrow, even compared to other animals. So what else is, you know, who's to say that there isn't so, well, there is clearly so much more. You know, you said about quantum physics earlier. As soon as you start looking into that, you can see that as soon as you start talking about entanglement and two things interacting, but have experiments changing when human consciousness is brought into it, it's like, of course.
I know. Should we start talking about black holes too?
Yeah.
You know, it's mind-blowing, all these thoughts and yeah, what are we, the notion of infinity. My kids, I have two kids, 9 and 7. Now I have to think about their ages. It's crazy. You have two also.
Yeah, 14 and 22.
Jesus. Yeah. Wow. How's it going for you?
Pretty good.
Okay. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. But it's funny, my kids ask me about infinity a lot, you know?
Yeah.
What is, daddy, what's infinity? Is infinity bigger than infinity? And I usually say, well, infinity equals infinity, you know? 100 times infinity equals one time infinity, because infinity is not a number.
Yeah.
And I think somehow it sums up the human, the limit of our... you know, the conception of infinity is very interesting because we need to put numbers on everything.
Yeah.
We need to measure everything. We need to count the amount of time we go around the sun and call it, you know, our age, you know.
Yeah.
We need to put numbers and names on everything. And somehow it separates us from life.
Yeah.
I have a friend also who read a book and then talked about that book. And I'm very thankful because, you know, I didn't read the book, but through him, I got
the synopsis.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's about language and how it separates, you know, communities and tribes, whether you write history or you don't, you know. Indigenous people traditionally don't have history books, you know, it's a oral tradition.
Yeah.
And the way some communities, some groups, some, you know, languages or some tribes name the trees, you know, by their function. And the way we name things, okay, what is it? What is it over there? Oh, it's an oak tree. Okay, got it. So you put the word oak tree and that's it. You wrap it up in your mind. But
there's
so much to that oak tree. A tree is a miracle. It's a seed that you put in the ground and there's all these, you know, fibers and stuff that appear out of the blue and water, you know, makes it happen and all that. It's a miracle. So everything is a miracle around us.
Yeah.
And we put simple names on miracles. So we don't have to think of the miracle. We put the word right here. It's like, who are you? Oh, I'm Dan Carter, or I'm Joe Duplantier. Oh, you're the singer of Gojira. Yes. Boom. That's it. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
That's it.
If we didn't do that, can you imagine how difficult life would be?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it would be what's that over there? It's an oak tree. Okay, great, I got it. But if someone said, it's an oak tree, and did you know that when those trees grow, they form their own community and they feed each other over different seasons and they use mycelia layer of mushrooms to exchange energy across the entire forest? And if a tree is cut down, the other trees around it will still support it and give it nutrients and life under the soil to keep it alive. It's like, that's too much, dude. I just need to know it's an oak tree. So, but I hear what you're saying.
That. Yeah. No, putting names on things is what makes us human.
And
we store knowledge and we store information and we, but there's a, there could be traps in that, just like a social security number and a name and surname and thing. Then it's merely a reminder that there are things behind appellations. There's realities behind words. There's realities behind someone's eyes. There's realities behind an identity. And I think if we're talking, to go back to, for example, the role of an artist in our society is to remind people of that, because we have the luxury to be in music all the time and worry about concepts and sounds and textures and pleasure and elevation of the soul, through art and stuff.
Yeah.
Our duty is also to remind people that there's more to things than just how they're called and or how they look like.
I agree, because I feel art is exactly that. An artist is reacting to all those things, whether they're aware of it or not. I'm sure we've spoken about this before, if not in an interview, just between the pair of us. But the art is the role of an artist is almost as a conduit to allow things to manifest in the world through us.
Absolutely, yes, conduit. Conduit. That's a good one.
Yeah.
It's a good one. I need to take notes. I need more words. More words. More weapons. More tools. Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Something that I wanted to ask you that's very specific and is probably wrong, but I was curious that when I listened to The Sphinx, that song in particular made me think about a bunch of very specific things. And I would like to put them to you, and you can say yes or no.
Okay.
Has it got anything to do with the French mystic René Schwalo de Lubitz? No.
Maybe, because I don't know this person, but maybe there's a link there. But
okay, because in
no.
So he was like a French mystic and Egyptologist, and he said in like the 1950s that there was evidence for water and rain erosion on the Sphinx.
So yes, that.
Okay, great. Because there's a guy called Robert M. Schock as well, who has sort of carried on talking about that. Yeah, it's the idea that consensus history is not actually true as we see it, because if that is water damage on the Sphinx and it is rain damage that's eroded it, then it's been there for thousands of years longer.
12,000 years at least.
Yeah.
Because that's the last time it was raining in this area.
Yeah.
So it's a reflection on our, again, the demise of civilizations.
Exactly.
If these great civilizations that, maybe built the Sphinx, if this evidence is true. By the way, you totally nailed it.
Thanks.
Damn it. You nailed it so hard it thinks it's Jesus Christ. Whatever.
Yeah, because the lyric...
It's all about...
Yeah, sorry.
This thing, yeah. It's all about that water on that head and that back. And I heard about that theory many times. And probably I read what this person wrote. And I already forgot the name that you just mentioned.
I'll send you a link.
Not very good. Yeah.
Yeah, because
but
the lyric is witness erosion, the rise and fall of man, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So it shows that these things have existed and there was civilization before that, which then then made me think about something else to do with the deserts actually. But you know Robert Oppenheimer, who's like considered to be the father of the atomic bomb, the guy that basically created the atomic bomb. When they did the first tests for the nuclear explosions was in Alamogordo in New Mexico. There was this thing that was created in the desert, which is called Trinitite because it was the Trinity test site. And it's like a type of glass that has been formed in the desert by the intense explosion of the nuclear fire, I guess, right? And similar desert glass has been found in Libya and Egypt, and that would speculate that there was another ancient cataclysm in that area, and that's why, like, because there's theories that it would be meteorites that would hit that could cause this glass. So 7 years after the New Mexico tests, he was at a university in the US doing a lecture about them. And one of the students asked him about those tests, and they said, so these were the first nuclear tests and detonations? And he replied, yes, in modern times.
Sure, why not? You know, molecules were existing forever. So if there was a civilization, it wouldn't be crazy to think that they did discover the atomic bomb or atomic power. Because all you have to do is split an adenine in half, right?
That's all you need to do.
It was right there, handy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting. Super interesting. Oh my God, I'm so curious. But now, the same time, you know, I read a lot about, you know, ancient civilizations and aliens and pyramids and similarities between the Incas and the Egyptians and rather the Atlantis existed or not.
Yeah,
and all that stuff. It's very interesting to think that advanced, societies and civilizations to end up disappearing because of greed, because of they became numb and they wanted comfort too much and or too much competition or whatever happened. Nuclear, you know, disaster would be that, maybe too much competition.
Yeah.
And it's a possibility that we could just vanish tonight.
I hope not tonight.
There's some crazy, or tomorrow night, I don't know.
Can we do
tomorrow morning?
Can we do next week? Yeah.
Well, after April 30 would be great. I need to drop my atom bomb. Yeah. That's my atom bomb. It's our album. I want to drop my bomb. And then we can go.
Yeah.
I'm just very interested. You totally nailed it, bro. Okay. Sphinx. Sphinx is all about that. I guess it's not that cryptic.
Okay.
The lyrics.
All right. Lastly, because I feel like we've spoken for nearly an hour. When I said earlier about Gojira inhabits this sort of similar space as the other bands that I mentioned, right? And that's because of the kind of themes and the worldview and the kind of art that the band makes. But also, I was thinking about each of those bands and your band as well has this legacy and influence on guitar music, because like now I can't listen. I get so much music sent to me, right? Obviously because of the show, and I'll listen to something and I can't hear anything with a pick scrape in it or a Digitech whammy, like on a riff, you know, to create that dynamic from a low to a high, like over accentuate it without thinking of your band. So, you know, in the over 20 years that your band's now existed in both its forms, I guess, right? We can say that.
Yeah, it's 25 years, very much.
So how do you feel about your influence and ongoing and what that will be in the future? Are you aware of it or do you not care about it? Do you not think about it or what?
I don't think about it too much. I'm aware of it, that we had, after all these years, you know, an impact and influenced other bands. But I see how that can happen. I was influenced myself by so many artists.
Of course.
And they ignited a fire in me, you know? Metallica, Sepultura, Morbid Angel, Death, even Scorpion at some time when I was in, before high school. Iron Maiden, Pantera, I was made of all these things, and it made our band, and it gave us a direction to follow and some guidance and incredible inspiration. And we got together. We using the same formula, the same setup: two guitars, one bass, one drum, and you know, it's not much that changed since the first you know, rock bands that happened in the 60s and stuff.
Yeah,
and what we did is just add our thing and stick together. So if anything, it's the consistency that we never stopped touring and making albums, and we're always there, and we're, you know, we care and we're professional, and we, you know, so it's almost natural that at some point it has an impact on somebody, you know, somebody who's, you know, always there touring, playing, and something cool comes out of it. And but it's amazing, man. I have to pinch myself sometimes to check if this is really happening, you know, our band is successful and has, you know, having an impact on other bands and stuff. It's incredible.
Yeah, and I bet those moments are really driven home when you're like, you know, when you're playing shows with Metallica, for example, or you're like chatting with James or any of those people that you mentioned as being an influence. To now be stood alongside those people is quite a trip.
Yeah. Part of me didn't realize it fully, you know, and I think it takes a lifetime to, you know, we all sort of worry what people think about us, how we look to others and career. You know, I think about my career. I don't think about just about my art all the time. I think about my career. I'm you know, I worry to, you know, the way you're going to perceive me and the things I'm going to say.
I like you.
Next time I'll see James Hetfield, you know, how I'm going to behave. Am I going to, you know, my word, I'm still a fan.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to pretend that we're friends, but in fact, I'm a fucking, you know, fanatic. And I forget how to talk and how to walk in front of James Hetfield. It's crazy, but it keeps me on my toes and it reminds me that I'm still a music fan. And I'm trying to stay humble. It's a good exercise.
Yeah.
But part of me became a bit more confident since the band has all this success. My wife tells me that I'm cocky and pretentious, and I take too much space at home. And I believe her, you know? So somehow it changed me, not just for the better. And believe me, I'm trying my best to be articulate right now and to behave and to look cool. But God knows what's going to happen after this interview is done. I'm going to, you know, be maybe an asshole to my wife. I don't want that. I'm trying not to be an asshole, but I'm also an asshole sometimes, I guess.
Yeah, I think we all are.
So I'm trying to put everything in perspective. So in the end, my conclusion is, when you ask me, do you realize, you know, that you influence bands? What does it do to you and stuff? In the end, when I put everything together, I say it is what it is. That's my conclusion.
Yeah.
I also, there's something I talk about sometimes, and I will just want to say this. This was a dream for us to be able to just play music, and I wasn't very specific. We never dreamt to be the biggest band in the world or whatever, but have a band that, you know, is successful, have an audience, make a living with music. That was our goal. Touring with Metallica was one of the goals. That check, we can check that box.
Yeah.
And it was my dream, but now it's not my dream anymore. It's it became reality. And it's very interesting when you reach one of your dreams, and I'm sure you've fulfilled many of your dreams too. Strike me as somebody who did that, achieved that, at least some of your dreams.
Yeah.
It's interesting how when dream becomes reality, it's a bit sad because you lost your dear dream and it became your reality, and the disillusion comes too because it's not exactly what you thought it was going to be, and you still suffer from mosquitoes biting your ass or, you know, getting old. There's something you can't escape. Mm. So I'm trying to build new dreams now. Otherwise, I don't want to be dreamless.
Yeah. what would they be?
Oh my God. I don't know. Yeah. I have to think about it, but I definitely want to be to reduce my impact, my negative impact on others and on the world, you know? Mm. Yeah. You know, we often talk about carbon footprint, and this is something I think about, and it's not neutral yet, but maybe one day it'll be when I have an earth home, sustainable home and solar power and all that stuff. And I will never take a plane ever again until planes are electrical, whatever it is. Yeah. But also the carbon footprint on others, you know, I would like to be friends with my kids when they grow up and all that stuff. But it's difficult. It's so subtle, everything. And we're such a product of our education and stuff. It's difficult to free ourselves from all these things. And I'd like to be, I'd like if my kids would call me when they're gone, when they left the house, they would still call me and visit me, you know. That would be my dream, actually. I don't want them to disappear on me and be like, finally, we're out of here.
Yeah, I hear you. Nice. Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
That was great. Thank you to Joe for doing this episode. Also, thanks to Austin for helping to facilitate it. You can listen to Fortitude now on all DSPs or pick up the vinyl online. It's out now on Roadrunner Records, and I'm looking forward to seeing the band play all these songs as soon as I can, because they're an incredible live band, and I think these are some of the greatest songs they've written. So, yeah, need to see that. Joe can be found on socials at Silvercord Studios, and the band is on Gojira Official on Instagram and Gojira Music on Twitter. I'm Daniel P. Carter on everything, and the pod is at Swim Podcast. Thank you again for listening. Leave a review, write a nice thing on iTunes, click 5 stars. It makes a huge difference. Take care of yourselves and those that are around you that you love. In fact, just take care of everyone, really. I think it would be a better place if we did. I am out. Peace.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.